Mini episode 1613 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to FDH Lounge Mini Episode 1613. This is FDH Managing Partner Rick Morris here. And I have with me the two finest post-draft guys for an NFL draft that you could possibly get on. They're also our best pre-draft guys here that we have most years. Jason Jones, Chris Galloway, two of our original FDH Lounge dignitaries, along with myself. Now, we weren't able to get Chris on for the pre-draft, but we have him here for the post-draft for the 2023 NFL draft, as per tradition. The one thing we got to do in between here, which for anybody that hasn't caught it yet, it is up, of course, at the FDH Lounge YouTube channel. Our first FDH Lounge episode in 12 years, episode number 153, because we went for about 3 hours and 20 minutes, myself and the scout Ken Bex from firstdownscouting.com, giving it to you live in real time during the first round of the NFL draft, breaking it out, and many moments of great insight coming from the scout, maybe a few from myself as well. Some great moments of mirth in there, such as when at the one point we disagreed on a player, when I busted out with a little bit of ebony and ivory, much to the disdain of ears everywhere. And of course, Jason Jones, I have to say, I truly appreciate on the YouTube comments there, putting me over for my suit game as per usual for any of these occasions. I always like to go mob boss style. And the scout and I had a tremendous time doing this. And if anybody wants to check out what our thoughts were in real time, up there at the FDH Lounge YouTube channel. But first, let's bring in our guys for the pre-draft here, or the post-draft, the recap. Jason Jones, our senior editor, the backbone of Pro Football Draftology 2023, still available on the main page at fantasydrafthelp.com. With the mock draft in there along with mine, but also Jason with the player rankings and with the big board. Jason Jones, pleasure to have you on here. I know you were following the draft very carefully as it was going on, and I'm looking forward to hearing your thoughts tonight.
Yeah, no, it was interesting. But before we get into that, I do want to circle back real quick.
Yeah.
Just mention to the folks that are listening to this, I spent the last 3 hours, you know, getting ready for this show we're doing right now, watching episode 153 with you and Ken. And let me just add, it is, because you might maybe not want to go there.
Okay.
It's very entertaining. It's absolutely worth watching. So when you're done listening to this, you know, like the video, subscribe, all that jazz, and then go back and watch episode 153, because it is really worth every minute of those 3 hours.
Yeah, and what you may be alluding to is somewhere on the back end of it, a brain fart in real time that became contagious from Ken to myself, where we very memorably goofed on something with a player here, and we were able to extract some high comedy out of it because of the ridiculous level of the whole thing. But yes, I appreciate the mention on that, and Ken and I had a tremendous time, and looking forward to doing more things of that nature as we go ahead. Of course, you, Jason, you were there for the original episodes back at the Sports Talk Network back in the day, as was this next gentleman. We were there from episode one all the way through. Chris Galloway, Chris, great to have you on for our post-draft coverage here tonight, and you must be teeming with thoughts coming off of this past NFL draft weekend.
What a weekend it was. I do apologize to you and the listeners for missing the pre-draft show. I'm excited to talk about and do the postmortem on what we all just got to witness, and have a lot of thoughts.
I think we all do. And one way to try and sum some of them up, if we can. We always like to, on this show, if we can, contextualize things with numbers and rankings, if possible. So right now, available on the main page, it's right at the top on FantasyDraftHelp.com, the 2023 FDH NFL post-draft rankings. And just to go through here, I'm going to read you off top 10, bottom 10, and a couple of different categories here for the just value, the pure raw value of the draft. Jason Jones's big board, ranking the teams based on players they got off of the big board, which went down to pick number 180 on his board. Top 10, Philadelphia, 963, no big surprise there. Number 2, Seattle, 874. Number 3, Detroit, 823. Number 4, Chicago, 778. 5, Houston, 716. Indianapolis in 6th at 672. 7th is Cleveland at 667. 8th, the LA Chargers, 596. 9th, Las Vegas, 583. 10 is Minnesota at 571. Working our way up from the bottom where it's not pretty, especially the bottom two. 32, Denver, 124. 31, San Francisco, 128 points. From there, it gets a little better. They're all in the 300s from there. Number 30, Carolina. 29, New York Jets. 28, Dallas. 27, Jacksonville. 26, Kansas City. 25, Cincinnati. 24, Miami. And 23, New England. We have another metric where it is value and needs. It's basically 50-50 on this. So did you fill your needs? And also, did you get your picks with the value, so it's the other metrics we just gave you. That's 50% of this one, value and needs. Number 1, Philadelphia, no big surprise, 1623. Number 2, Houston, 1576. 3, Indianapolis, 1422. 4, Cleveland, 1417. 5 is Seattle. 6, Detroit. 7, Las Vegas. 8, New Orleans. 9, Chicago. 10, Minnesota. It's pretty similar at the bottom as to what the other category was with just the raw points. 32 is Denver, 31 San Francisco, 30 Carolina, 29 Dallas, 28 Washington, 27 the New York Jets, 26 Kansas City, 25 Baltimore, 24 the New York Giants, 23 Cincinnati. How did teams do simply on covering the percentage of their team needs? The leader in this, number 1, Houston, 86% of their needs were filled draft weekend. By the way, we counted for these purposes for Philadelphia. We had them still needing another running back. We're counting the Swift trade as filling a need there. Tied for second, Cleveland and Indianapolis at 75% of needs filled. Number 4, New Orleans, 70%. Tied for 5th, Las Vegas and Philadelphia, 67%. 7th place is Minnesota, 57%. And then a big tie for 8th place at 50%. Jacksonville, Miami, Pittsburgh, Seattle, Tampa Bay, and Tennessee. Working our way up from the bottom, 32, Denver. Here we go again. They filled a whopping 14% of their team needs. From there, you have a big tie in 29th place. Carolina, San Francisco, Washington, all at 25%. You have Dallas in 28th place at 30%, tied for 25th. The Chargers and the Giants at 33% filled, and tied for 22nd place, the New York Jets, Arizona, and Buffalo, all at 33% filled. So I'm just going to start there and go for some reactions from you guys. I'll start with you, Chris. If there were any surprises when you got this from me, when you started looking through it, anything that either jibed with or definitely did not jibe with what your instincts were as the weekend was going along?
Well, I mean, the one thing that really stood out to me when you sent this over was two drafts that I really hated were San Francisco and Denver.
Yes.
And
that's why.
then I get your numbers and I go, oh, look, the numbers actually supported that. I didn't understand what either one of those teams were doing. And some of that, too, is maybe because I was not a big fan of the Mims pick. I know a lot of people are high on him. I'm not. As far as the 49ers go, I mean, taking Jake Moody in the 3rd round, I mean, just, I didn't get what they were trying to accomplish. I will say this, at first blush, and this is where you're going to cringe, I really didn't like the Detroit Lions draft live while it was happening.
Okay.
Because it came back to, for me, what you and I and Jason always talk about, which is the value, right?
Like, yes.
What is, you know, where you're picking guys and all that. And in the moment, I really didn't like their draft. But when I sat back and I looked at, regardless of where they picked them, it was clear to me that Detroit was committed to picking the guys that they wanted, and they really didn't worry about round and value. You know, they were very high on Jahmyr Gibbs. I wasn't as high on him.
Right.
But obviously there's a lot of people that were, including Detroit. So if you put aside the fact that they basically traded down, and they were prepared, from what I understand, to take him at 6.
Ooh.
You know, the fact that they traded down and basically picked up the 34th pick so they could take Sam Laporta, the tight end out of Iowa, that may prove to have been a very good move by taking the player they wanted anyway and adding a pick and picking him up. Again, a guy like Jack Campbell, I love that pick. You know, was 18 a little high for a guy that most player rankings had him somewhere in the 40s? Again, value versus where, that was a little bit surprising. But again, they got a good player. They got a good player in Sam Laporta. They then later, in the second round, got a very good player in Brian Branch, a safety, which they needed. So it's like they, they got what they wanted, regardless of where they took them. So when I stepped back, I was not as critical of their draft as I was, by the time we got Saturday night. In terms of retrospect, they got some good players, maybe not where I would have wanted to take them ideally, but they still did. So, I mean, there are a number of other teams that jumped out at me. I thought the Patriots, I know most people are really down on New England's draft. I like their first two picks, in terms of Gonzalez at corner and Keon White, I think is going to be a stud in this league. So I think that getting him in the second round was really nice. Then they stocked up on a lot of old linemen. The only fault that I would have with them is, I mean, really? You're drafting a kicker and a punter? I mean, that is one thing that I'd be highly critical of. Wasting two picks on a kicker and a punter were questionable. But, by and large, I mean, again, they need interior line. They went out and got guys that they wanted. I like their first two picks. So I'm not as down on the Patriots draft as everybody else, other than the fact that they also gave Mac Jones no new weapons. And so I don't know if this is Bill Belichick's commitment to just absolutely, sabotaging Mac Jones' career. The fact that he and Bill O'Brien will not say the young man's name is awfully is concerning if you're Mac Jones. But anyway, those are just some initial thoughts I had on just a few teams.
Yeah, we're on the verge here any day now of maybe seeing Bernie Kosar on Twitter saying, "My goodness, I've never seen Bill Belichick crap on a starting quarterback of his so badly." Yeah, the one thing I will also...
Yeah, Bill's always so effusive with praise. Yeah, right. How does a guy go into his third year after they sabotaged him last year and you have coaches won't say his name? Like, doesn't it strike you as almost just beyond juvenile?
But here's the thing, though, that is juvenile. But the thing is, too, and I'm a huge proponent of, in life, it is not fair to get mad at somebody for not being what they aren't. And Mac Jones is a guy they reached on. And like they're seeing right now, oh, we reached on him. Oh, he's not really a guy who's going to carry us to the playoffs. It's not his fault. That's a you thing, not a him thing. But anyway, I will also say, as far as it goes with the Browns, one more point to make on that. I said previously, it was a thing where in drafts in the past, the whole thing with create a need, fill a need, ultimately, I mean, the Browns basically patented that, right? And it's been gimmick infringement for any other team to do that. Well, Detroit. You talk about them getting Laporta in the draft after they just cut Hockenson. A tight end from Iowa, by the way. I think they owe the Browns a suitcase full of gold bullion for that kind of gimmick infringement, don't they, Chris?
Well, you got John Dorsey there now advising them, so it fits.
It tracks.
You know, they're that Cleveland Browns team up north. You know, listen, they soured on Hockenson. They didn't think that he was working for them. They shipped him off. I mean, I'm okay if a team, you know, decides a player isn't for them, which obviously they did with him. And, you know, so I don't look at it exactly the same way in this case that you do. It's not like, hey, Hockenson was lighting the world on fire for them, and boy, they just let him walk in free agency and now they're drafting. You know, they made a decision that he did not fit what they want to do. So they moved off of him, and so they went and got a tight end that they believe in. I get your point.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, I mean, and again, the other Brownsian thing is, you know, I mean, at this point, you know, taking an Alabama running back that everybody says can't miss, you know, at the top of the draft.
Yeah.
Don't forget, we're only 10 years away from Trent Richards and being in the Hall of Fame, as some people said. 20 years from now, we'll be at his induction ceremony. Well, he's got 10 more years to get that done.
Yeah.
So it was a very Brownsian draft for the Lions, although I don't hate it as much as some people do, obviously.
True. Yeah, it looked like a pretty good draft, although, again, a reach for Gibbs, I thought. I agree with that. Jason, your thoughts on this? Surprises that you had when you looked at these numbers, and non-surprises based on your own thoughts?
Well, for starters, we could do this whole show on Detroit, and I'm going to circle back around to some of the things you guys just mentioned, but I could do a whole show on Detroit. Side note to the comment that Chris just made, about 2 years ago, I did adopt them as like my second fallback team, or like if, you know, the Browns didn't exist again, I'd root for them. And the whole reason is because it's the same. It's the same fan, just different colors. But anyway, the thing with Detroit that I love and that nobody's talking about, and there's a beautiful parallel here, is there's a TikTok sound where somebody says, from some music video, where someone says, it's cool when they do it, it's a problem when I do it. And that's exactly what's happening here. Because what Detroit's doing is prioritizing that culture they're developing and deciding to take the Patriot way and zero focus it. And I don't suggest that there's a blueprint of players they like. I think that they like Dan Campbell-ish players, meaning it's not what they do, it's how they do it. So going back to Hockenson, Hockenson's incredible talent-wise, but he's even keel most of the time. When you watch Laporta, that dude plays like his hair's on fire. And I think that's the difference. It's not production.
Right.
It's not, they're both from the same place. I just think that they like the way Laporta plays a lot better than the way they like how Hockenson plays. And that is only increased when we talk about Jahmyr Gibbs. Now, if we go back to the pre-show, I don't remember the exact words, but I did say something along the lines of, yes, Bijan Robinson is the number one running back, but don't sleep on Jahmyr Gibbs. He's right at his heels. So when Bijan goes 8th overall and then Gibbs goes 12, I don't hate it as much as most people do. I also very much believe in this comp that Jahmyr Gibbs is a more electric Kamara. He feels like a weapon, not a running back. So I love that. And then again, going back with this sort of Dan Campbell-ish way, insert Jack Campbell. And he is maybe the most purely Dan Campbell-like player I've ever seen. So, again, this whole idea, if we look at the Patriots or even the Steelers, you can say there are players that they're looking for, and they don't give a damn about what the national consensus is. They just pick the guys that fit their system. And to what I'm getting at here is I think Detroit's doing that, but it's just more focused. There are less players that they're looking at than we think they're looking at. And then when you look at the whole draft, and when I say the whole draft, I'm throwing out the last couple picks, because I don't know what they were doing with that. But we're focusing on Jahmyr Gibbs and Jack Campbell. I've mentioned Sam Laporta, who's a nice pick for them specifically. And then Brian Branch was a remarkable value pick. And then I don't think I need to do a whole lot of selling right now to say, right situation, right timeline. I like Hendon Hooker to the Lions more than I like most quarterbacks to the team they went to. Not talking about Bryce Young, and I'm not talking about C.J. Stroud. Everybody else I like less than Hendon Hooker to the Lions. So absolutely love what the Lions doing. We'll get to Pittsburgh in time, but there's something there that nobody's paying attention to that absolutely is incredible. And I absolutely agree that when I was watching the draft, I thought, being someone who lives in Colorado and is familiar with the Denver Broncos, I thought they absolutely and completely wet the bed.
Mm-hmm.
Without question or qualification. I don't care what they want to say. When I told you off air, Rick, I was making my own list and just kind of put up against the one that you put out.
Mm-hmm.
And the one thing I noticed, Denver, I listed Marvin Mims and Drew Sanders and stopped writing names.
Yeah.
And with San Francisco, I'm going to read it verbatim what it says. San Francisco, I don't like any of this. So literally, I think the beauty of this is the metric we've been using for over a decade now totally works.
Yep.
You can watch the draft, get a feel for it, come back to the numbers and go, yeah, I was right.
I think that's true. Yeah, the numbers don't lie in this case. And again, it is one of these things where it is about getting value with your picks and in those ways trying to coordinate that to what your needs are. And yeah, that is a thing that's very important also. Now, and that's what leads us to situations where you look at Kalijah Kancey with the defensive tackle from Pittsburgh going with the 19th pick to Tampa Bay. For those that were checking out the live stream with myself and Ken Bex, he was liking the pick an awful lot. And it's like, I like it on a talent basis, but I'll start with you on this one, Jason. This is one of these things where I'm looking at it like, defensive tackle? Really? Like, they have needs all over their roster. This is a Swiss cheese roster at this point, and they're taking another defensive tackle. Like, if you're in the first round and you have that much suckage across your roster and you're not looking to address one of those areas, again, that's a thing very much like what the Browns did for close to 20 years.
Yeah. There were a handful of selections that you look at and go, you know, I like the player. What are you doing?
Yeah.
And to your point, I mean, I don't know how excited they are for 2023. And I'm not trying to pile on a former Brown or anything, but you've got Baker, you have Mike Evans. The offensive line is a little iffy. You don't really have a playmaker at tight end that I'm aware of, at least.
Right.
And like you said, there are holes at every level on the defense. So, in the first round, I get it. Fans especially like to think of this as first round is gold and all that. And nobody likes the idea of trading out of the first round from a fan perspective. But this is one of those that you look at and go, this would have been a beautiful opportunity to Bill Walsh the draft.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
You go from where you're picking. You trade back five spots to somebody that's got to have something, right? And we heard tons of rumors that there were teams that were trying to trade up in the back end for Will Levis. I still don't understand that. But when you look at that, they could have traded back five, then traded back seven. You know, they could have been picking at like 34, 42, and, you know, somewhere in the 70s. Get something where instead of having one first rounder and then one second rounder and one third rounder, now you're getting, you know, you get three guys that might potentially be starters year one. So I do agree that I scratched my head at that. Now, putting Kancey right next to Vita Vea, I understand is a nice idea, but this gets us back into that place where Philly was before they became a Super Bowl contender, where they were just drafting D-line every year. And it wasn't like it is now. Like, Philly now is scary. But before, it was just, we're just taking defensive linemen like the Detroit Lions used to do in the early 2000s with wide receiver, right?
Right.
Like, great, you've got a lovely tandem of defensive ends. Fantastic. Who's getting to the quarterback? Because it ain't them. Who, you know, who's going to patrol the linebacking core? Because they got not much.
Yep.
And the one name that they have wants to be traded. They have a good push from the D-line, but you got nothing in the secondary. So it's definitely a head-scratcher. And there's more than a few of those. I still have no idea what the Rams were doing. It just feels like some people didn't like the position they were in, and they were just like, screw it, roll the dice.
Right.
But the Tampa Bay one was a little concerning. But, you know, for every Chancey pick, there was, you know, like the Bengals getting Miles Murphy in the late 20s.
Yep.
So, you know, it goes both ways. But rest assured, when I woke up the second day, you know, having hours to get ready, you look at the second and third round, you go, holy jeez, why are there so many people still on the board? And it's because of stuff like what Detroit did and some reaches that we had. And some guys just slipped. And that's the beauty of waking up today, too.
Right. That's true. Looking at it, Chris, what are your thoughts on this? There had to be some picks where you were sitting there going, what were they thinking?
Well, you know, I think talking about Tampa Bay, what struck me about that was I liked a few of the players they grabbed. You know, I liked the tackle out of North Dakota State. Seemed maybe a little high, but again, good bones and structure on that guy to develop it in year three. I like the Kansas pick if you're trying to make some changes next year. And that's kind of where I felt like this draft was for Tampa Bay. Like Trey Palmer out of Nebraska. A bunch of guys that I feel like could develop. Durham, the kid, the tight end from Purdue. Again, another one that a year or two down the road could be a pretty cool a pick. I felt like that's how I felt like their draft was. It was like they weren't picking for 2023. Mm-hmm. They were picking for the fact that they've got a clear cap space and they got to start putting in some guys and develop some guys. And so the draft for me, for them, felt like they're basically saying, "Yeah, fuck you, 23. We're focusing on 2025, and that was the feeling I came away with their draft, that it was way down the road, and it's a team that knows that with, you know, Baker Mayfield at the helm, that they aren't, you know, they're not going to compete right now, and so that's just how they drafted. They're gunning for 2025. You mentioned Pittsburgh and Cincinnati. You know, it pains me, just because as a Browns fan, you know, I really like what the Steelers did. I mean, they went out and they got, you know, Broderick Jones to tackle. I mean, they have to fix that offensive line, and they understood need in that moment and went out and got a big, long, athletic tackle. You know, getting a corner like Joey Porter Jr. and being able to do it and bring some member of the family in was another great move in terms of the fan base. I mean, the two guys from Wisconsin I loved, Benton and Herbig. Herbig was a guy I had sort of targeted for the Browns, hoping that they would get there. Darnell Washington is a beast of a blocker at tight end. Again, that running game with Najee Harris. I mean, I felt like, and I know Jason's going to get to Pittsburgh, so maybe I'm kind of teeing it up a little bit for him, is, you know, I just felt like they just understood what they needed to do after last season to put pieces back in place, to make themselves relevant again. You know, they didn't worry about, like, weapons, so to speak. They went right to the basics, the blocking and the tackling, right? You know, big guys in the trenches, talented guys in the trenches, you know, be able to run the ball and stop the run. That's what I came away with what Pittsburgh was looking to do. And I just think they nailed it. I think they had a great draft. And that really sucks for Cleveland fans in the ultra-competitive, you know, North Division, especially with the fact that Baltimore got themselves up off the trash heap by keeping Lamar Jackson in the fold, going out and signing OBJ. We don't know how much is left in the tank, but he's got anything. That wide receiver room has gotten a heck of a lot better in Baltimore. And with a new OC, I think we're going to see some different things out of out of Baltimore. So, I mean, I like what Baltimore's done in the offseason overall. And, you know, so the North just keeps getting stronger and stronger. You know, the Bengals, I thought, had a really good draft, good value with Murphy at 28, picking up another edge rusher. You know, the safety out of Alabama, Battle, I really liked him. He's sort of a jack of all trades. And then Chase Brown, the running back out of Illinois. They needed to address that because, I mean, let's face it, Nixon had a very underwhelming season last year. And was that him, or was that that O line still trying to gel? So, I like in general what they did. I thought that the only flaw I would have with the Bengals is I thought they would get out there and try to get another O lineman in this draft, and they didn't. I thought they still need some depth there. So that was the only thing that was surprising to me in terms of their draft.
In terms of the AFC North, I'm going to get Jason's thoughts, as you said, in a second here, Chris. But I want to ask you first on this. And looking at this, one of the divisions in football that's a real joke right now is the AFC South. But I was impressed with all of their drafts. And I think if in 2 or 3 years, if they're one of the best divisions in football, we're going to look back and say that it started with this draft. Do you agree with that?
I do. I thought they all had pretty good drafts. Carolina, I mean, obviously they got Bryce Young.
Well, the NFC South still sucks. NFC South is still hot garbage, but the AFC South, I felt like everybody really got going.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, I'm sorry. I was thinking NFC.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they're all hot garbage in the South, right?
Yeah, yes.
I would agree with that. I liked what the Jaguars did.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's an up and coming team. I thought they put together a very strong draft. The Colts. I like the Josh Downs pick. UNC Homer. And I like the Blake Freeland pick. That was a guy that I really wanted the Browns to target, and they took him right before the Browns in the fourth round. And I wonder if the Browns had him in that spot on their board. But other than that, I wasn't, I'm going to put a question mark next to Anthony Richardson. And okay. Here's the thing. I like, like I said, I like the Downs and the Freeland picks down in third and fourth rounds. For Anthony Richardson, I mean, there's so many people that are like the raw skills and the bricks to build the house. They're all there, but how many guys have we seen like that come out of college that have all the raw tools, and he's a 5'2" guy, and he could light the world on fire. I got to put a huge question mark next to him. Because, we saw glimpses of it in college, little flashes, but we never really saw all of it together. And so he's going to take, I think, a lot of time. They're going to take their lumps with him if they intend to play him a lot, as Irsay has said, this year. So I don't know that I'm fully, down with what Indianapolis put together because of that top pick. He has real boom or bust potential in my mind.
That is true, but I felt like Indianapolis was a team all the way around that helped itself. Houston, which they had almost half their roster I would have put down as holes 2 years ago. Boy, have they filled them in the last 2 years here. So that whole division, I think, getting better and better. Jason, I want to get any of your thoughts about either teams in the AFC South or AFC North. AFC South is hoping to get to where the AFC North is. And like I said, I think they took a big step along that path in this draft. The AFC North is about as tough and competitive as it gets, of course.
Yeah, real quick on the AFC South, I'm probably not as excited
okay.
as everybody else. And it's because everything, for the most part, to me, is top-heavy with conditions. The one exception that I'll say is Houston. And the one saving grace, and I'll get into – Ken and my point here in a second on Will Anderson, but love CJ Stroud. Nathaniel Dell, I like, and even going deep. Henry Coho was a guy that I was kind of hoping for later. So I do like that they hit on all levels of the draft, which is a little bit different. Tennessee, obviously, Peter Skoronski is really nice. I think if they play him at tackle, it's a wasted opportunity. And then I'll just go ahead and be the villain right now and say that I was definitely in the camp of what are people so excited about when it comes to Will Levis, because I don't see it. And what I mean by that, he has moments. Kind of like Anthony Richardson, he has moments. But what scares me is the decision-making. There are times when he just runs like a bull in a china shop, and I have no idea why. He's got throws he misses, he's got throws he makes. So I just was not drinking the Kool-Aid on Will Levis, and I think he's going to be, I think at best, he'll be solid. I don't buy this that he's like an athletic Ben Roethlisberger. I just don't.
Okay.
Now, as we go through.
And by the way, I'm with you on Levis, not a fan. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah, glad to find out I'm not just in the corner by myself on that one. So in general, you know, I like the AFC South. I'm probably higher on Anthony Richardson just because of his physical gifts and hope that coaching will fix the rest. And I do have something I want to get into on the NFC North, but we'll save that. And then really the thing I'm chomping at the bit on is going back to Pittsburgh. And like Chris, I'm throwing up in my mouth when I say some of these things. Broderick Jones, in hindsight, was probably without question the best tackle prospect. I had him that way as default because Skoronski is not a tackle, not at the NFL level at least. Joey Porter might have been the most predictable first pick of the second round I've ever seen in my life, and I don't know why everyone was hemming and hawing like that's not what was going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
So that's fine. Keanu Benton, for all of us that were looking at defensive tackles, if you're a team that needs a defensive tackle, he was on your short list. So that is, again, regrettably nice. I do like the Nick Herbig pick, maybe not as much. Apparently he was really excited about getting picked by them. But what I want to talk about is Darnell Washington, and it is not Darnell Washington by himself. Because Darnell Washington by himself is probably the biggest active tight end in football, but him as a weapon is not what I'm getting at. I don't know how effective he is going to be as a pass catcher, and I don't know that he's necessarily going to scare many defensive coordinators. Where this gets real interesting, though, Broderick Jones is legit. As a blocker, Darnell Washington is next level. There are some talent evaluators that referred to him as a sixth offensive lineman. Now, what's the biggest problem in the grand scheme of Pittsburgh's offense? And you got Rick, you and Ken touched on this on that episode 153, where it's like, yeah, he's got all the ability, but sometimes he hesitates to just get there.
Right.
So what's the easiest way to fix that? Address the offensive line. Well, they've done that, and they've done it kind of quietly for the last 2 years, actually. And now you go out and get the biggest tight end, at least I can remember seeing in recent memory, who just so happens to be almost as effective as a run-blocking tight end as a right tackle would be. Or, God forbid, you put these two on the same side. You put Darnell Washington just outside Broderick Jones, and I'm telling you right now, you might as well have a dump truck leading the block before Najee hits the hole.
Uh-huh.
So that's what I mean when I say this is not a metric thing. There's no way that either my pre-draft rankings or the scoring model or anything like that was ever going to pick up on this. But it's the fact that they got those two together
yep. That
is just scary for what they can do. And the only example really I can think of was, and I forget what game it was, but I was watching the Browns game, and on offense, they brought somebody in as an additional blocker. And when you watch that play, it was a goal line running play. And when you watch it again, you just see that other lineman, I want to say it was the kid we got from Cincinnati a couple years ago, just absolutely blew up the defender. And it was just a walk-in situation. And that's what I'm afraid of. Is there's going to be moments where you're looking at third and short and they need it and they're going to get it. And it's going to be like watching Jacoby Brissett or Jalen Hurts doing a third and one quarterback sneak. It's just automatic at that point.
Uh-huh.
So as a Browns fan, I'm terrified of those two as a combination.
Well, you talk combinations. I mean, look what they did getting Keanu Benton. I mean, there's a guy who keeps his linebackers clean. And that's what a guy like Nick Herbig needs. He doesn't need O-line getting to the second level because he's slight. You know, he's a lot like who was the Wisconsin kid that we picked up in the fourth round a few years ago? Left the Browns to go sign with Jacksonville. Then ended up in Pittsburgh two years ago.
Oh yeah, Joe. What's his face?
Schobert.
Schobert. Yeah.
Yes. He's a lot like Schobert, right? Like, I mean, a lot high motor, smaller guy, is going to, you know, tackle all over the place. But if you get old linemen on him, he's not as effective. So they did. I mean, they paired up. If they're going to take him, they took a D lineman who's going to keep his linebackers clean. I mean, the Steelers really did a really nice job in this draft.
Yeah.
Now, luckily, they have the fourth best quarterback in the in the division.
Yeah,
And that may ultimately keep them from being able to win the division. But yeah, I'm with Jason. I hated it, and you know, it's like all those years I always hated the Ravens draft because they were so good. This year I hated the Steelers draft because it was so good. And by the way, my Will Levis comp was Paxton Lynch. So that tells you what I think of Will Levis.
Okay.
Yeah, shots fired.
I've not gone that far, but I love that on a consumer level.
Yeah.
Absolutely love that.
That is, man, that is harsh. And speaking of which, you're saying that Pickett is the fourth best quarterback in the division. This just in, Chris, Tyler Huntley wants to fight you.
Okay, I could be wrong on that. He might be the fifth best. Huntley went to the Pro Bowl, even though by bullshit means.
Right.
I mean, it was absolute trash.
Yeah.
But he does get to put that on his resume, Pro Bowl quarterback. So you may have a point. He may be the fifth best quarterback in the division.
Yeah, and that's one of the things that puts a ceiling on what they want to accomplish, no question about that. There are some teams that are in that boat where they have a ceiling on what they're trying to accomplish. So I want to ask.
When we get to our preseason, you know, later in the summer, we start talking about all the divisions.
Right.
You know, when you talk about the AFC, now with Aaron Rodgers over there, with, the kid in Jacksonville emerging, I mean, the quarterback situation in the AFC is a literal murderer's row. If you don't have a guy that you could legitimately say could be considered a top 10 quarterback, you are hosed. And for anybody that questions why the Browns and the Haslams gave and did what they did, give up everything they did, and to, you know, further soil their reputation, or however else you want to look at it, to go get Deshaun Watson, just look around the AFC and realize they knew they were showing up to a jet airplane fight with a bow and arrow. And they knew they needed to massively, at least do anything they could to at least try to upgrade that position. And if you're in the AFC now, I mean, if you don't have that type of quarterback, you just forget it. Just forget it. And then, unfortunately, for the Steelers fans, I think that's just where they are. You know, they may be coached well enough to get, you know, to get to that maybe a wild card spot or not, you know, or just miss it. But they're not winning a Super Bowl with that kid.
No, they're certainly not. And what I want to do to kind of bring this around at the end here is just to see with you guys as far as any teams you think advanced or kind of fell back from the pack as far as their chances to reach the playoffs and or any other thoughts that you have that we didn't get to yet from draft weekend. I'll start with you, Chris.
Well, I didn't like the Chiefs draft. And again, this is hard for me to say to you that, you know, they're going to fall back. They have Patrick Mahomes and Andy Reid, right? I didn't like their draft. I didn't like the 49ers. So in both of those cases, I could say to you, I didn't like what they did, but then it's not likely to cost them this year. It may cost them in a couple of years. You know, the Rams, they didn't do enough to help themselves get back there. That roster's a bit of a mess. And hey, Sean McVay, what happened to, you know, your annual tradition of picking late round at least one guy out of your alma mater?
Right.
You know, so at least maybe a training camp invite. You know, so again, it's hard for me to say because drafts typically, these you don't expect these players to propel you into the playoffs and vice versa to drag you out of them. But I can tell you the playoff teams that I, you know, Miami, I wasn't enamored with their draft. You're the Miami Dolphins fan. You can tell me what you think. Chiefs, 49ers, those are sort of playoff teams that sort of strike me off the top of my head that I wasn't exactly enamored with what they did. Same thing with the Giants. You know, I don't think that they're hurting themselves. I think that, you know, necessarily because of the draft, but I do think the Giants are a team that are one of my top clubs that I would look for a step back out of, you know, not to make the playoffs and to take a step back. Obviously, with what they've done, the Jets in the offseason look to be taking a step forward, you know, speaking of New York. I mean, hell, Seattle may end up being AFC number one out in the AFC West this year. So I think they help themselves this offseason. So I don't know that the draft ever really means a lot in terms of playoffs, but, you know, down the road, there's a few teams that I question what they did, and you know, that'll manifest itself in a few years in terms of, you know, their roster.
Absolutely. Well, we certainly have our thoughts right now as to who advanced and who didn't. And I'll tell you, San Francisco, they may have played their way out of the playoffs when you look at the fact that their quarterback situation is very much unsettled going into training camp now in terms of the health of everybody. Now, again, the NFC is basically hot garbage, so it may not hurt them. But, again, if I was San Fran, I wouldn't be taking anything for granted as putrid as that conference is. Jason, same thing with you here. Thoughts on anybody who advanced, who might have fallen back team-wise as a result of the draft here? Any additional thoughts, et cetera, et cetera?
Couple of things. I'm going to do one team that people just aren't talking about, and then I'm going to do my homer thing. And that team no one's talking about is Chicago, believe it or not. I think it was very important that their front office or whoever is making those decisions decided that the way they were using the quarterback wasn't working and have made some changes to that we've already seen. And then, and this is a hindsight take because, as you mentioned on episode 153, I did not have him going this high. But Darnell Wright, for what they want to do, might be perfect, the kid from Tennessee. Javon Dexter was another one of these defensive tackles that I was tracking. He's a little longer than I'd like him to be, but I like the pick. And then what's interesting is Stevenson's not bad, but Zach Pickens out of South Carolina was another defensive tackle that I was keeping my eye on. So Chicago's one of those teams where, like, none of the picks are going to wow you. You're not going to remember watching one of their guys thinking, oh, that guy's going to be an all-pro. But their draft is deep, and they've got solid picks all the way through. Now, Cleveland, which is something I didn't think I was even going to bring up. I don't love it top to bottom, so I'm not going to go over the top. I do, even though I was really hoping for Jalin Hyatt to slide, I had to go back and watch him yesterday and completely revising my take on this. I like Cedric Tillman, if he's healthy, a lot better because he fits what Cleveland typically is looking for in a receiver. Runs clean routes, catches with his hands, attacks the ball, all that stuff. Jalin Hyatt would not have fit that, and therefore I was probably spending a round and a half wishing for something that was never even on the table. Then as much as I'm looking for a defensive tackle, I don't know that Siaki Ika was the guy I was hoping for. He's not a three-down player. I'm worried about some of the nuances of his game. DeJuan Jones, and I don't want to enrage the Ohio State Buckeye fans, but if you think that that's anything more than a project pick, I got news for you. First of all,
thank you.
DeJuan Jones has to get comfortable with the idea that he needs to never be over 350 for starters.
Yep.
And I don't love a lot of his technique. Now, is he 6'8"? Yeah. Is it hard to get around a 6'8" guy? Yeah. But not when his technique is bad. So I didn't love that as much as some of the Homer people do. I love the Isaiah McGuire pick. Cam Mitchell, for all of the Cleveland people out there that were like, oh, they just drafted Newsom's boy to make him happy. Yes and no. They drafted his boy, that's fine, but they drafted him to play the slot corner, which seems Newsom doesn't want to play. So that's
bingo.
Magic for the functionality of it. And then Luke Whiffler from Ohio State, I'm totally fine with that. I don't think Harris is long for this team. However, if you notice, I skipped over somebody. DRT, quarterback that got out of UCLA. I could not be more in love with that pick if there was money on it. And it's not because I think he's ever going to challenge Watson for the starting role, but he plays at a lower level a similar game that Watson does. So now, if he has to go in, and if he's capable of leading the team, at least you don't have to change the play calling, or at least the playbook. So I felt in a team that at 7-10, we're not kidding ourselves, they aren't like on the cusp, but they have a lot of pieces. It should work. And I think that the tying thing that keeps all this sanity together is that Joe Woods, in my heart, believes without question that you can actually be a successful defense if your secondary is legit and everything else doesn't matter. And removing him and bringing somebody in that runs a wide nine and understanding size and length and all that stuff, we saw new picks that are not what we were used to seeing over the last couple of years. And I think that's got to be good news, pushing them closer to playoffs. And we'll see what that entails, but I'm not going to go over the top and say that all of a sudden now they're an AFC championship caliber team. They're not yet. And then the last thing I want to say, and this is just to make all of us feel old. Kansas City, I believe it was the third or the fourth round, drafted an offensive tackle by the name of Wanye Morris. Everybody over the age of 30, that should mean something. It has nothing to do with football. That's a name that we should be familiar to you. And after the draft, after I was going through, watching a bunch of people on YouTube and a bunch of other things to see what people were saying, I legit heard somebody say the Kansas City Chiefs selected offensive tackle Wanye Morris, like Kanye with a W, and I wanted to punch myself in the face so hard I would not be knocked unconscious, because I can't possibly be that old that a player is named after a celebrity named Wanye Morris. For those that aren't following this, he is the most noteworthy member of the fantastic R&B group Boyz II Men. If he's named after a celebrity and that person chose to reference Kanye Morris, my only thought is, if I'm that old, I don't want to be here anymore.
Well,
well,
that's fun stuff.
You feeling that old, me having to put over Jerry Jones for a heartwarming moment during the draft. There's all kinds of things that have been unforeseen, Jason Jones.
Yeah, and that was the other thing I really wanted to touch on, in case people just watched the draft and turned it off. If you're not following social media channels and all these other things, you might not have picked up on this. Late, I want to say it was the sixth round, the Dallas Cowboys select a running back out of Kansas State by the name of Deuce Vaughn. That's noteworthy because Deuce Vaughn's father, Chris Vaughn, is the director of scouting for the Cowboys. Now, scouts...
Nepotism!
And, you know, they're trying really hard to make sure that's not the case, and that part of the story is that. Because at some point, I guess, the way the story goes, Jerry Jones sent Chris Vaughn out of the room, and the room made the decision to pick Deuce, and then they brought him back in, looked him dead in the face, and said, would you like to hand in the card? the director of scouting never turns in the card. That just wouldn't make sense. And then there's this nice moment you can find on YouTube or find on TikTok or Twitter or whatever. But there's a nice little story that goes along with it. And you get to see this moment where a father gets to have this moment. It's nice. It's a nice, you know, draft moment. I personally didn't think as highly of him as a prospect, but it's a nice story. If you need a nice little, you know, last bit of 60 minutes, make your heart warm a little bit. It's a nice story.
I watched it live, and it was just that. I watched it live, and it was just that, you know, watching it go down. It was very clever how they did it.
Yeah, I have to take my hat off to it. I mean, if you're going to go in that direction, that was the way to do it, and it was a good moment. I felt like it was a lot less cynical than, I think, a couple of years ago. Didn't the Tribe have it where Tom Hamilton's kid got drafted or some crap, or he got to announce him in a spring training game or something like that? I thought that was a lot more contrived, you know. But
hey Rick, I want to say that I really appreciated what Jason said about the Browns draft. I really agree with just about everything he said there. Mm-hmm. You know, and the Siaki Ika pick. I mean, again, a two down guy. I think they see him, you know, again, I think they want to run a rotation, and I think they think that he has a place in that. Run stopper, not necessarily a pass rush guy. Although the Baylor people swear he's better at that than you think. So,
okay.
Time will tell. I really appreciated Jason saying what he said about Jones. The guy's a project. I mean, I thought the best analysis was, I don't know who said it on Saturday, but they're like, this guy is either get the potential to be an all, you know, a Pro Bowler or out of the league in 2 years. And I just all the excitement from Browns fans because of the, you know, the cross pollination of being Buckeye fans of, you know, well, you're on notice, Jedrick Wills. I'm like, okay, first of all, he's a right tackle, not a left tackle. If he's going to even be in the league, because he's going to be a work in progress. So I appreciated Jason, pumping the brakes on that pick. Probably one of my least favorite picks, actually, that they made. I liked the McGuire pick. I, just like Jason, like the DTR pick because they're looking for a versatile backup, right? I mean, a guy that, at least for the short term, they're not going to need to spend a lot of money, potentially, if you're getting a guy in the fourth round. So certainly that puts Josh Dobbs on notice that, like, hey, he may just be with us for a year because we're picking this kid because we think maybe he's got that number two potential. And Mitchell, I like the pick out of Northwestern. When he and Newsom played together, started together in that one season before Newsom left, you know who had a better pass breakup rate than Newsom on that team?
It was
Mitchell.
Yep.
And that's exact. And here's the thing: he is a guy that could play the slot well. So I, you know, again, Jason was spot on in terms of how and why they picked him. And then the Luke Whippler pick, I mean, in the sixth round, you know, at the bottom of the draft, basically, getting a guy that some people had even a grade on there somewhere around, maybe around the 50th best player in the draft. There were some that did. You know, getting him as a future center, you know, or at least a backup for the next couple of years, that was an amazingly good draft pick in that moment. I don't know if Andrew Berry is just now like the wizard of the sixth round, but he certainly seems to be becoming that. So I really like what the Browns did. They didn't really reach, you know, they found value in the right places, and they drafted for need. And again, I think that comes back to your rankings sort of said, yeah, they did. They, with limited numbers and not having first and second round pick, I thought Berry did very well.
I thought so as well. Although, again, you know, we'll see. That's the story of every year with the Browns if they live up to it. Jason Jones actually just had the call drop here, so we're right at the end anyways. But as far as the Browns offensive lineman, Jones, that's one of those things in the scouting parlance where they talk about His success level will come down to two instruments. In this case, Chris, it's the knife and the fork.
That's exactly right. Jason's spot on when they say he's got to get that weight down. There were some people said his pro day he was up around 400.
Ooh.
You can't play at that weight. Unless the Browns plan to convert him to defensive tackle, which, hey, newsflash, maybe you do.
Yeah.
He's got to get down under 350. I mean, he's got to get, or at least no more than 355. He just can't be that big and be able to move quick enough laterally with the way some of these defensive ends can bull rush, and at least with a bend around the edge. So I'm with you on that.
Exactly.
They've got to get him on a. I mean, there's talk about his motivation. Does he really like football? You know, what's his? You know, how in love with football is he? There's talk about his weight. I mean, he is a project, and so all this talk about, like, you know, tackle of the future, look out, Jedrick Wills. I'm like, no.
That's just idiocy again. But that is to be expected from a lot of corners of the fan base. And again, Jason Jones having dropped here at the end of the call. You will have that from time to time with these phones today. But we're right at the end anyways. I want to thank Jason for having been on for this great recap of the draft. You too, Chris Galloway. Thank you so much, buddy.
Hey, I enjoyed it as always, Rick. Always a pleasure being with you. And I look forward to the next time we get to talk NFL. I'm guessing that'll be a little preseason action.
Yep, not too far down the road. We'll get to do that. Thank you for being here. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in to FDH Lounge Mini Episode 1613.